ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
श्रीहिरण्यकशिपु उवाच. The blessed Hiranyakashipu said, and keep in mind that he's blessed, Durvinita, most impudent. The word impudent means in and then pudere from Latin, which means without shame. So you're without shame, impudent. You just act, but you don't have any shame. Munda Atman, oh stupid fool. Kula Bheda Kutta, who are bringing about a disruption in the family. Adama, O lowest of mankind. Stubdham, most obstinate. Matshasana, from my ruling. Udratam, going astray. Neshye, I shall bring. Twa, you, Udya, today, Yamashayam, to the place of Yamaraj, the superintendent of death. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Translation, Hiranyakashipu said, O most impudent, most unintelligent disruptor of the family, O lowest of mankind, you have violated my power to rule you, and therefore you are an obstinate fool. Today I shall send you to the place of Yamaraj. Please repeat. Hiranyakashipu said, O most impudent, most unintelligent disruptor of the family, O lowest of mankind, you have violated my power to rule you, and therefore you are an obstinate fool. Today I shall send you to the place of Yamaraj. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hiranyakashipu condemned his Vaishnava son Prahlad for being durvinita, ungentle, uncivilized, or impudent. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, however, has derived a meaning from this word, durvinita, by the mercy of the goddess of learning, Saraswati. He says that du refers to this material world. This is confirmed by Lord Krishna in his instruction in Bhagavad Gita that this material world is dukkhalayam, full of material conditions. Vi means vishesha, specifically. And Nita means brought in. By the mercy of the Supreme Lord, Prahlad Maharaj was especially brought into this material world to teach people how to get out of the material condition. Lord Krishna says, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. When the entire population, or part of it, becomes forgetful of its own duty, Krishna comes. When Krishna is not present, the devotee is present, but the mission is the same, to free the poor conditioned souls from the clutches of the maya that chastises them. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur further explains that the word mundatman means munda, very bad or very slow in spiritual realization. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.10, Manda Sumanda Matayo Mandapagya. Prahlad Maharaj is the guide of all the mundas, or bad living entities who are under the influence of Maya. He is the benefactor even of the slow and bad living entities in this material world. Kula Peda Karadama. By his actions, Prahlad Maharaj made great personalities who established big families seem insignificant. Everyone is interested in his own family and in making his dynasty famous. But Prahlad Maharaj was so liberal that he made no distinction between one living entity and another. Therefore, he was greater than the great Prajapatis who established their dynasties. The word stubdom means obstinate. A devotee does not care for the instructions of the asuras. When they give instructions, he remains silent. A devotee cares about the instructions of Krishna, not those of demons or non-devotees. He does not give any respect to a demon, even though the demon be his father. Much chasanodvritam. Prahlad Maharaj was disobedient to the orders of his demoniac father. Yamashayam. Every conditioned soul is under the control of Yamaraj. But Hiranyakashipu said that he considered Prahlad Maharaj his deliverer, for Prahlad would stop Hiranyakashipu's repetition of birth and death. Because Prahlad Maharaj, being a great devotee, was better than any yogi, Hiranyakashipu was to be brought among the society of bhakti yogis. Thus, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has explained these words in a very interesting way, as they can be interpreted from the side of Saraswati, the mother of learning. Sri Hiranyakashipuravacha, He Durvinita Mandatman Kulabeda Karadhama Stubda Much Trashana Nodvritam Neshe Twadya Yamashayam. Hiranyakashipu said, O most impudent, most unintelligent, disruptor of the family, O lowest of mankind, you have violated my power to rule you, and therefore you are an obstinate fool. Today I shall send you to the place of Yamaraj. I offer my respectful obeisances to His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada and to all the devotees who are present here today. You are all Vaishnavas and therefore the most worshipable in the universe. Hare Krishna. They were saved here by the guidance of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur from hearing words of criticism against Prahlad Maharaj. And this is not some word jugglery, but it is actually the way that the world works, because the universe has a dual purpose. It is created, according to the personified Vedas, for either the sense gratification of the living entities or for their liberation. And it's the choice of each individual living entity to make whether to engage in pursuing the objects of desire here in the material world, or in pursuing a higher cause, which is to serve the Supreme and eventually go back home, back to Godhead. So those two choices are very clear. However, the two, that is, those who pursue the spiritual path and those who are absorbed in trying to enjoy the material world to its utmost, don't meet very well in the middle. As Krishna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Yanisha Sarvabhutanam Tasyam Jagarti Bhutani Tasyam Jagrati Bhutani Sanisha Pashito Munehe. And this means that Yanisha Sarvabhutanam, the time when all the ordinary living entities who are absorbed in trying to enjoy the material world, when they're asleep, then the muni, the devotee, is awake. And then the opposite is true when the devotee is asleep, and he's really asleep to material enjoyment, then the living entities are awake. And they're working in the same material world, but they have two completely different views of its purpose and what is happiness here in this world. I recounted in the book that I wrote, one morning when I was in Los Angeles, I lived in Los Angeles for a couple of years, right next to the temple, and I had to walk about two blocks to Mangalartik. And one morning, it was a Sunday morning, I was on my way to Mangalartik. And, you know, it's like 3:30 in the morning, and I was walking down the street, and I saw an SUV full of revelers, meaning they were coming back from enjoying the libations and sights and sounds of Los Angeles in the late and early, late nighttime hours and early times in the morning. They came barreling down the street, but when they saw me walking down the street in my dhoti with tilak on, looking all fresh, just having jumped out of a cold shower, they slowed down, and all of them looked at me like, what are you doing up at 3:30 in the morning? And I looked back at them, and I was thinking, what are you guys doing up at 3:30 in the morning? We were going opposite directions. They were just getting ready to take rest for the night, and I was just getting up and ready to jump into the kirtan. And the materialists and the spiritualists cross paths like this, but they wonder at each other and think, like, what are you doing? And so there's this dialogue that is not contrived, that takes place when Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, empowered by Saraswati, dissects the words of Hiranyakashipu. First of all, on one level, we had the clue that it's the blessed Hiranyakashipu who's actually a devotee. So he's playing the part of a demon, but he's making these statements about Prahlad Maharaj as if in a drama. And ultimately, because he's playing this part, deep down inside, one could say he doesn't really mean it. He's playing the part. And on the other side, even though he's saying it, there's a way that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur changes the words and finds out what the glorification is of Prahlad Maharaj. And that's possible also because of the juxtaposition I just talked about between the materialist and the spiritualist. What a materialist thinks is bad, the devotee thinks is good. For instance, people go to astrologers all the time, and if they're materialistic, they freak out when they see their chart, because it has all kinds of ups and downs. Everybody's chart does. It doesn't matter who you are. You look at it and you're like, this is good and that's bad. It's like, what do you mean bad? Why do you have to have bad? But for the devotees, and if you have somebody who's interpreting your chart devotionally, they may say, oh, this is a really good period for you. You know, you're going to lose everything. You'll lose all your possessions. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after he came out one day to the Ganges and was taking his bath, was met by a very cantankerous and angry brahmana who had tried the previous night to get in to the Srivasangam kirtan, but they wouldn't let him in. And he then cursed Nimai Pandit and said, you'll never have any standing here in the material world. You'll never have any happiness in the material world. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he broke his thread and cursed him. Aryavachasa, this is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. These are the curse of the Brahman, or the words of the Brahman. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this, that you'll never get any material happiness, he was like, yay! Because the devotee understands that the material world is not meant for material happiness. If one has that point of view, if one adjusts one's expectations of what you can get out of the world, then he doesn't become disturbed by the changes of the material world and the so-called good and bad. He remains steady in both of those situations. As mentioned in the purport, the material world is a dukkha alayam. An alaya means a place, like Himalaya. Himalaya means a place of snow, right? Hima, snow, and alaya. It's a place of snow. And so then, and then there's the Bhojanalaya, which means what? You get a little roti and some. And then if you go to the Dukalaya, you're in for a whooping, because that's what you get there in the Dukalaya. So if you come to the Dukalaya and you want to find some happiness here, then you're going to be disappointed. So one has to adjust one's expectations in being here in this material world. So looking at the specifics, which is what we're pointed to do in the purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, first of all, says that this term, Durvinita, which in the word for word means most impudent. So the goddess of learning, through the pen of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, then dissects the word Durvinita, which means a really derogatory term towards Prahlad Maharaj, means do this material world. And then Vishesha and Nita. That Prahlad Maharaj, Vishesha, was specifically Nita brought in to help eradicate the misery of the material world. So the word Tuk refers to being out of alignment, actually. And a common analogy given in relationship to this word is the axle in a wheel, like in a bullock cart. There's an axle that goes through the wheels. And if it's out of alignment, then the wheel will not run properly. It may even create a lot of heat. And I remember driving home from the St. Louis airport one night, and our axle was out of alignment, and the car caught on fire, which was not unusual for driving in devotee cars. But it was Duke. It was out of alignment. So everyone's out of alignment in the material world. And so although the word on one side, according to the intention of Hiranyakashipu, meant you're an extremely impudent person, meaning that you're shameless, is actually that Prahlad Maharaj specifically came to the material world he was sent here to help everyone become realigned with the purpose of Krishna consciousness. And that's a very glorious thing, that somebody's sent here to help with the mission of the Lord. Second is Mandatma. Munda means very bad. And this is confirmed, Manda Sumanda Matayo. In the age of Kali, people are very bad. So Prahlad Maharaj is the guide of all the mundas. So one shouldn't feel bad if one's munda. And it's certified by the Bhagavatam that everybody's bad in the age of Kali Yuga. So no one should feel out of place. It's actually it's a good thing to be bad. It's good to be bad. Because then the great personalities take compassion. In fact, Jiva Goswami mentions this in the Bhakti Sandarbha, that the main qualification of everybody in the Kali Yuga is their disqualification. And the more disqualified you are, in America, for instance, if you don't have any money, then you get free health care from the government. If you have a little money, they won't give you anything. So you have to be broke before you can qualify for any kind of assistance. So in the Kali Yuga, everyone's munda. And here Saraswati's glorifying Prahlad Maharaj, that he's the one who's come to help the mundas. So we should feel happy if you feel that you're Munda, or you know that you're Munda, that you're very bad, then be joyful, because Prahlad Maharaj has come to lead the Mundas. And all one has to do is follow his system. Then he says, and there's just a couple more terms here, and then we'll have some more discussion. We'll have some discussion. There hasn't been any yet. Kula Bheda Karadama. By his actions, Prahlad Maharaj made Greek personalities who established big, big families seem insignificant. So what Hiranyakashipu was trying to say is, you're ruining my family, because I had this plan that I would have a super demon son, and now you're gone. You've gone the other way. This is very disturbing to a father, that the son doesn't follow in the footsteps of the father. My father was a psychologist, and he never professed to believe in God. I think he was raised as a Catholic, but he rejected the church later on, became kind of an intellectual. And I remember after I'd been a devotee for several years, and he took me to the dentist once, and on the way home, he said, you know, nobody else in our family ever needed God. What happened to you? And I thought, how a Hiranyakashipu-esque of you to ask me something like that. This is a similar situation with Prahlad. It's like, you know, what's the matter with you? What happened? But actually, you know, Prahlad is such a great soul. He's leading all the disjointed families around the world and bringing them back into the main family, which is Krishna's family. This is the glorification given by Saraswati. And then finally, Prahlad Maharaj is much chasanodritam. Prahlad Maharaj was disobedient to the orders of his demoniac father. So the prophet mentions in the purport that when the demons are active and when they speak, the devotees don't care for their instructions. In the seventh canto later on, there's discussion of Varnashrama, and Prabhupada says, what about somebody who has to go out and work among those who are of demoniac nature just to make a livelihood? And what do you do then? And you have to talk to people, you have to interact and so forth. And he says then the devotee, when he gets some instruction or has some dialogue with somebody like that, then he says, yes, sir, very good, sir. Thank you very much, sir. But he doesn't internalize those things. He only acts superficially in order to do whatever he has to do. And this is the way that the devotees work within this world. They're not influenced by the demoniac instructions or the propaganda that comes through the airwaves about demoniac living and so forth. They simply live amidst it, but they don't become influenced by it. Dukeshu anuvigna manaha, sukeshu vigatasprija, vitaraga bayakroda, stita dirmunir uchite. Krishna mentions how a devotee is able to work in the material world, and despite the fact that there are disturbances, that person, that devotee, isn't disturbed by them because his mind is fixed on serving Krishna, and in all circumstances goes on serving Krishna. So this is the great example that Prahlad Maharaj has set for us, that although he appeared in a demoniac family, he showed, and so is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur showing, that one can extricate oneself from that situation through the elevation of consciousness and through reinterpretation of all the things that are happening by seeing them in relationship with Krishna. And even as devotees go out to teach Krishna consciousness to others, and they hear people object to the teachings of Krishna consciousness and so forth, they reinterpret those words also and don't take them very seriously. There's a letter that Prabhupada wrote to all the devotees in Germany, and he said in it that in the material world, people are living as if in an insane asylum. And I've never been to an insane asylum, but I went to a Alzheimer's clinic because my father was in one. He passed away in the Alzheimer's clinic, and I used to go see him regularly. And everybody in the Alzheimer's clinic was convinced that they had a particular job there. Like, there's a man that lived there. I got to know a lot of the patients because it's a pretty fluid situation. People get to walk around and meet each other. So one man thought that he was the handyman for the place, although he didn't have any tools. And apparently he had done that previously. Now, my father was a very interesting thing because my father used to teach a graduate school at San Francisco State University in psychology, and he had PhD students. And one of the exercises that they did that he had them do was to work as interns at an Alzheimer's clinic. And so when he got in the clinic himself, he thought he was in charge of the place. And he was, the nurses would come in, very good job, yes, okay. And so everyone there had some fixed idea about what they were doing and what their role was. But to those who came from the outside, it looked a little odd because it was off. So Prabhupada wrote this letter and said, this is what the material world's like. Everyone's living as if in an insane asylum. He said one person thinks I'm Napoleon, and somebody else thinks I'm some other great personality. And said even sometimes when you present Krishna consciousness, people may become violent, and they may say things. But when I was in the Alzheimer's clinic, if somebody said something to me, I didn't take it very seriously. I reinterpreted, this is what you meant to say, and this is what you were really thinking. So when devotees are interacting with the people of the world trying to impart Krishna consciousness, they also think like this. And so oftentimes people will say that, I already know all this, or I know everything. I met a man when I was going to door-to-door. Of course, we've met many times, but this was such a pronounced and vivid scene. We're going door-to-door in these cheap apartments. I mean, they're all cheap. Even the ones they say, you know, they give some fancy name to it, you know, Vista Royale. It's just made out of stucco. Give me a break. And they pay, you know, they pay high-end retail to live in these places, and they're just little prison cells. But, you know, it seems fancy. It's California. Anyway, we're going knocking doors, and this Indian man comes out in his bathrobe. It's already 12 in the afternoon. And, you know, he comes out of his door and kind of didn't close it all the way, but he was standing in front of him. He said, what do you have? You know, and he saw the Bhagavad Gita in my hand. He said, I know everything. And I was like, for heaven's sakes. And I called all the other devotees. I said, get up here quick. There were a few downstairs. I said, come up here now. This man knows everything. I want you to meet him. And he was like, no, I didn't mean it like that. You know, like, but that's what people say. They say all kinds of crazy stuff. Because they're influenced by the modes of material nature. But the devotees don't take it like that. They reinterpret it. And they, you know, they use it in such a way that the person can be benefited. They can turn it around. For instance, one of the ways devotees, when they're distributing books, are able to negotiate with people and allow them to take to Krishna consciousness. And when people make objections, we have this rule that you always honor the objection. If somebody says, you know, I already know all this, then you say, I know, I could tell. That's why we picked you out. We saw you, and we could tell you know everything. And so many other ways that the devotees adjust their language, just like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was adjusting his language, in order to present Krishna consciousness to people. And again, it's not, this is not some kind of misinterpretation, but it's actually changing the energy back to its connection to Krishna. Ritertam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tad vidyadatmano mahayam yatad paso yatatama. The devotees know the art of reconnecting everything to Krishna. And when they do that, then the situation also changes as well. This is an interesting fact of communication. You know, people just with a few changes of words can change their perspective. Or you can change the perspective for somebody else when you're presenting to them or when you're trying to offer them various alternatives. It really makes a difference what you say, the preciseness of your language and the intention behind it, and then the tools to present it in such a way that it can realign the way they look at the world. So devotees are always doing this. They're realigning their own vision of the world to see how everything's Krishna's mercy, and to remember that everything is connected to Krishna. And when they meet other people who speak gibberish or say all kinds of crazy things, then they take those words and they repackage them and hand them back to them. Say, how do you like that? And they go, well, I guess it's okay, you know. I can live with that. I guess I can be a Hare Krishna. So devotees have to be expert like that. Change the energy back and then hand it back to them. Say, now take a look at it. See how you like that. So this is the example given to us by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and Prahlad Maharaj, being right there in the thick of it, is able to not be touched by the energy, the Stita Dhir Muni. Whatever happens, he, because of the strength of his connection to Krishna, through his consciousness, everything around him changes and becomes spiritualized in relationship to Krishna. And now let's have some discussion. Yes, Radhisham Prabhu.
I was just appreciating that, not being touched by the negative energy, because I was thinking about book distribution and preaching in general. There's so many situations in this day and age where people are very much unhappy to see you, and I was reminded of our reading where Chitraketu got cursed by Parvati, but later on in the purport, it says that Shiva told Parvati, well, by his tolerance, your curse was rendered ineffective.
Yeah, that's a nice point also. And when the devotees tolerate the various statements of people when they insult them and so forth, It can actually disarm them, because there's no reaction. The reaction happens when there's some impurity in the heart and somebody feels piqued and they want to respond, and it increases the polemic. Yes, Prabhu.
Hi, Krishna. Thank you very much for classes. I was on this point of how devotees will take the words of somebody, sometimes they might be speaking gibberish and represent it or repackage it. I was being reminded of sometimes on my way to work, when I used to work, I would listen to these sales tapes. And one tape in particular, the salesperson would say, if somebody said no, it's because they didn't K-N-O-W know enough about the product to say yes. So sometimes when I'm out on books now, that rings in my mind. If somebody says no, it's okay, you don't have enough information yet to say yes. So I try to give them more.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a nice use of that. And also, when somebody says, I want to think it over, then the salesperson, the expert salesperson, would think, I really appreciate that you'd care enough to think this over. And just so I know, for my own edification, what is it specifically you wanted to think about? As oftentimes people, they'll out of hand reject Krishna consciousness. I'm not interested. And it's like, really appreciate that. But just so I know, what specific thing are you not interested in? What part of it? Well, the whole thing. Well, just name one thing, you know, one thing about it that you don't like. I remember one time I was in the LAX, I was next to Bopadev distributing, he had sold a Higher Taste cookbook and someone brought it back on the grounds that it said a Hare Krishna recipe. So I don't agree with this. And he goes, okay, which recipe is it that you didn't agree with? Oftentimes when there's an objection, the mind does it out of a general sense of rejection, because it accepts and it rejects in generalities. But if you ask for a specific, and when you're communicating with somebody, what is the specific thing that you object to? When you can get to that, just like in sales, if someone tells you the specific thing, then you can deal with it. If they tell you something general, there's nothing you can do about it, because it's amorphous. You can't grab onto it in any way. So it's important to be specific about this and find out what the real objection is. This helps to get down to the core issue of why I reject God in the first place. What are the things? You can give reflections, which means anything you heard from the verse, purport, or the monologue.
It's a question.
Okay.
It's just the marathon is coming, and generally there is some days that things are really difficult. I generally get like one or two days, or maybe more, where, you know, I don't seem to kind of connect or do whatever is required to apply what you are telling us. How do you deal with these situations?
What were they telling you?
All kinds of things, you know, no matter what, even if someone is, it seems like, you know, whatever door you knock, is, you always get the same response, and you begin to think, well, it's something with me, obviously, you know, because, but it's like, you know, I'm not interested, or,
okay,
you know,
I understand. Well, what I do, and this is not just a technique, this is the way I've been able to maintain or go on, and that is that I change my definition of what success is for myself, because if I have a particular expectation that this is what success looks like, that people are going to like me, or I have all the right answers, or I feel good about myself and other people feel good about me, or whatever it may be, or I sell a certain number of books. If that's my expectation and I don't meet it, then I have every right to be disappointed. But I also have the right to change my expectation. I can say, you know, look, I'm successful just if I walk out the door. That, to me, that's success. After all, you know, It's a glorious activity just walking out. And who says I have to produce a certain month? It's a self-imposed goal that's saying, you know, you have to do a certain number of books or hours or whatever. I mean, the marathon basically is, you know, something we just made up ourselves. It happened spontaneously one year in Los Angeles, and after that everyone says, you have to do the marathon. And like, yeah, I mean, you should. I mean, it's nice, but... who says you have to? I mean, you know, for your own self-preservation, you can say, this is the way I do the marathon. I mean, I'm not advocating not being enthusiastic and putting in long hours, but I am saying that internally, you have the right to redefine what success is. And I find that when, for instance, in dealing with groups of devotees who are thinking about, as you gave the specific example, going out on Sankirtan, that the more I help them adjust their expectation, the more they're eager to go out. Because oftentimes my mind is my main obstacle, because I'm thinking, this is the way it has to look. This is what I'll have to perform in a certain way. And that's a very difficult goal to reach. So just be yourself, go out, and depend on Krishna. One thing I used to do when I'd go out by myself, for 3 years I had to go out all by myself. I had no other Sankirtan partner. And I went out every day, because I only lived 7 minutes from my Sankirtan spot, and I did that deliberately. But I ended up losing the partners that I had there that I was going out with. And so what I did was I made myself a chart. And I figured out there were six scenarios that could possibly happen, general scenarios. One was I'd call to somebody, I was behind a booth, and they wouldn't look at me, like they pretend I didn't exist. That was one category. Then the next category is they'd look at me and then say no and not stop. The next one was they'd look at me, acknowledge, come over, look, and then reject it. And the next one, they'd look, come over, and they'd take it, but they'd give just a token donation. And the third one is they come over, they'd appreciate it, and they give, you know, a fairly decent donation. And the sixth one, I should say, was that they'd come over, they'd appreciate it, and they'd give a huge donation. So that covered the spectrum of the six things that could possibly happen. And I kept a chart every day, and I still have them somewhere, I think, stored away in my attic for posterity's sake. And every week, you know, I'd look at them, and they're always the same. And I just sit there and I check off the box. The guy didn't look at me, check, fine. That's the same to me as the guy gives a huge donation. It's all the same. Big donation, medium, no donation, hates my guts, fine. That's not my business. All my business, my only expectation is I go there and I perform my duty to the best of my ability. If Krishna would like to send a bunch of people who don't look at me, that's fine with me too. It's up to him. But I did find that the chart always filled out. At the end of the day, it was always the same, no matter what my mind told me. So in any service that we do, we should understand that there is a certain set of results that can come, and we shouldn't categorize those, say this is good, this is bad. It's all good. If you're sincerely doing your service, it's all fine. Anything else? Anything else means any reflections, anything you heard that stuck in your mind. And if nothing stuck in your mind, then I'm going to bury my head in my arms and cry. Okay, Samyaprash.
Thank you very much, Guru Maharaj. I appreciated a lot of points, but the one that really sticks out in my mind is how you began the class by saying that this isn't word jugglery by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, because actually the world has a dual purpose. And it always has a dual purpose, and it always will. And those purposes are at odds. And so for somebody who's trying to move from one purpose to the other, from the material sense gratification idea to the enlightened idea of actually service, pure service, then it's a really nice meditation. I just appreciated that this is a nice meditation, that there's going to be two voices in my head or two motivators. I was thinking about that on Parikrama, but not in such clear terms, that I could be chanting japa, but meditating on sense gratification, or meditating in a way that I'm putting myself in the middle, or I could be chanting japa, going around Govardhan and Kartik, surrounded by pure devotees and all this, thinking about Krishna. But it's up to me to have to look and see, and maybe have to adjust it. So I thank you for that reminder.
Yeah, thank you for noticing that. I'd add to that, and I think it's a nice avenue to go down and discuss in general. And I'd also say that how we articulate things is important. Words are important. Speech is important. It defines what our expectations, what our goals are, and that's why we appreciate words so much, and that's why the Veda is comprised of words. And they're meaningful, and the combinations of them are meaningful, and they have power. The mantra has power. It's a spiritual formula. And so it's important how we talk about what our goals are in life, who we are, to be very specific. And also resist the demoniac nature to define things as separate from Krishna, as my and to define myself in ways that separate me from service. I'm just appreciating how when we're reading Prabhupada's books, there's so many turns of phrases that are so deeply realized, but he uses the language in such a way that it catches you. Like the other day, for instance, we heard Prabhupada give a beautiful sutra where he said that that kama means desires that cannot be fulfilled. Those are called lusty desires. And when you hear that, it just stops you. It's like, hey, wait a minute. that makes sense. And the preciseness of that is important. If you just talk about desire, there are many wisdom traditions that talk about desire, eradicating desire, and so forth, but it leaves you hanging. That gives you a possibility, actually, of climbing out of the material world. In that sense, our language is, we build the stairs through which we can elevate ourselves and actually leave the material world. So this precise use of language and using language for transformation, that is a real art that is mastered by the acharyas. They all do that. They take their realizations and they articulate them in such a way that the general population can take those as spiritual formulas and transform their own lives. That's what we're doing when we're reading Prabhupada's books. It's reprogramming the tendency to use language for demoniac purposes and for degradation. And when we get used to using language in the proper way, then we're well on our way to the spiritual world. Yes, Prabhu.
In that connection, I really appreciate the way you said we shouldn't take seriously the words which are influenced by the material modes. And you spoke about from non-devotees, but I thought also about devotees because we're all in the asylum and we still have our ideas, maybe not I'm Napoleon, but something else than Dasa, Dasa, Nudasa. So we shouldn't take that seriously and use the language for transformation, as I said.
Yeah, and also seeing that, they don't know what they're saying. They don't really mean it. They're living entities, but they're saying things that because they're influenced by the modes of material nature. It's like an intoxicated person. They can say all kinds of things. One day when I was in Santa Cruz, Shraddha Devi Dasi, this is probably about 7 years ago, we were there on the street, and this guy was with his daughter, I think she was about 10, and I presented him a book. He was a little skeptical, but then when I asked for a donation, he flipped out, and he handed the book back, and he said, see? And he started giving directing a diatribe towards his daughter to educate her about the ills of the world that are perpetrated by organized religion. And he went on and on for about 5 minutes about how there's no difference between God and a street sign, that these people, all they want is profit, blah, 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 blah. But somehow or other, I sensed that he was just mad. I mean, mad in the sense of crazy. And I tolerated and I just listened and kind of agreed with everything and absorbed it. And lo and behold, after 5 minutes, he changed his mind. He took the book back, gave us $5, and handed the book to his daughter and said, here, you read this. And these kinds of things happen, if you have a bedside manner and you know that you're dealing with patients, you have to tolerate some of these things. Maybe two more, and then we better stop.
I really like that story about the Alzheimer's clinic, and one thing I liked about it is that there's a few things I liked about it, but one thing I liked about it was that it's a very nice kind of blatant example of how we all are so convinced of what we are. And when somebody who has a more enlightened or sober or sane perspective looks at it, they're like, you're not in charge of this place. You're not a mechanic. You're not a whatever you think you are. And I really appreciate you sharing that experience. And
Nagar, the one night when I came out of there, it's a very disorienting kind of feeling. There's your father, it was your father, now it's hard to relate, and all the other people in there. And I came out, I had to stop and put gas in the car, so I was there self-serve gassing it up. And this guy drives up in a really fancy SUV and hops out, and he was Joe Cool. He had he was dressed nice, and you could tell he had a swagger, like full bank account, good job, everything. He was like cleaning his, and I was thinking, he's this far away from, this is another kind of disorientation. He thinks he's this, but I was thinking, like, you're that far away from being on the other side, and where does it all start and end? And did you have a point? Yes, last point. Thank you, Nagar Kirtan.
I like very much more than 1,000 things, but one thing I want to share is about the changing the energy. This stuck in my head, changing the energy, because usually we get under the circumstances, we get influenced, but we are not actually, this is a bad habit, and this is an exploration of our natural power, actually, to control ourselves and the situation. So we are not obliged to live under the circumstances. We could at any time change the energy. This is in our jurisdiction to do if we get educated and exercise this. So I like this very much, how we can change the energy. It's not because the person was very bad or something under the circumstances. No, it's up to us. We can do it. And this was the series of wonderful examples how it works. So it's like super inspiring.
Yeah. Sometimes I say, when people ask, how are you doing? I say, it's a kung fu fighting all day long. You know, that's how I feel. Because there's so much service to do and so many things coming at me that you're like, how are you doing today? Kung fu fighting all day long. But then thinking about martial arts and Aikido and, you know, from Japan, it's not a sense of combat where you're smashing against the other person, like, you know, NFL football, like harder you can smash into each other, you know, the more the crowd goes wild. The Aikido is the science of seeing how there are pressure points and there are energy that are coming at you. So a little old man, you know, can take on these big burly people, but because he knows all the focal points, just like when you see an expert Madunga player, you know, one little tap and it's a totally different sound. When they're expert, it's like, wow, how did you do that? You know, you just touched it. I touch it. It doesn't sound like anything. So this is our the way that, you know, we have to become expert to finesse the energy so that it's always flowing towards Krishna. We're always bringing our language towards Krishna. We're always bringing our mood of service towards Krishna and connecting it. And it does require kung fu fighting all day long. You can't stop, because it'll keep coming at you every single day and every single minute. So you have to get in shape, and you have to be ready for that interaction with the modes of material nature. Gaur Premanande Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribo, Nitai Gaura Haribo. Hari bo nitai gora hari bo. Vanchakopurusha kripasanabeva chapatitanam pavani bio vaishnavebio namo namaha anantakoti vaishnaviniki jai. Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, hey, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.